Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back. Episode number 147 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, as usual, another amazing week in the crypto space.
Yeah, not as amazing up, but still tons of action.
Yeah. And, I feel like we set a new high, which is always nice. But there is some really cool things happening. And one of which, I mean, I know we've talked a lot about regulation and some excitement, I think, around there is starting to build. I saw that Trump is planning on creating a crypto advisory council here pretty soon, which is really interesting. I mean, there's not a ton of details other than they'll help advise on digital asset policy and work with Congress on crypto legislation, establish the promised Bitcoin reserve, which is buying, a million Bitcoin in the next 5 years, which is now up to like a 35% chance on Polymarket. So I think there's a lot of people not expecting that to happen. And even guys like Adam Back, who's probably one of the original OGs in Bitcoin, is saying if that does happen, then expect Bitcoin to hit $1 million this cycle, which is an insane theory as well.
Yeah, I've kind of put some thought to this because it seems to keep getting more and more real. I mean, you know, there's kind of two levels. I think Trump can just flip a switch with an executive order and convert the 200,000 Bitcoin that they've got in the Marshall's office to a reserve. And then to add more, I think that he can add a little bit more through the Treasury. But in order to get to the million over the 4 or 5 years that Cynthia Lummis wants to do, I think that will require congressional, they'll have to actually pass the legislation. So, but, you know, it's kind of like one or two phases of this seem pretty highly likely. And the third big home run phase seems less likely and more difficult, but still possible. All of it is good enough. Like if they just convert the 200,000 Bitcoin they have already, that's a big enough signal to every country in the world that they have to do something. And the concern is, you know, if you're like, if the federal government says they're going to buy Bitcoin, then everybody's going to flood into Bitcoin, and the price is going to rise, and everybody's going to front run the government. So by just holding on to the 200,000 they have on hand, then they're not really being front run. So we'll see how it goes. I'm kind of, you know, governments have to get into Bitcoin in order for Bitcoin to do what I want it to do, which is get as big as possible. So once it's adopted by the federal government in any way, I think that's the step we need to signal that, you know, there's really no turning back as it is. I mean, things are just so good for Bitcoin right now. But if they start to put it on the balance sheet in sovereign wealth fund, I don't see how you could be bearish. I don't think all of the government's going to stomp it out concern is completely gone. So if it's hard for me to think we don't see market cap of gold type levels, which would be like $800,000 Bitcoin. So Adam Back saying a million or a million two or whatever, that's not surprising. But you're talking about seeing it in the next 12 to 18 months, which would be pretty wild.
Yeah, a little surprising. So one of the other things that they talk about that this advisory council is going to do is coordinate between the agencies, which includes the SEC, the CFTC, and the U.S. Treasury. And it's been exciting because you look at the SEC, which has been, I think, one of the biggest roadblocks in the past. We now officially have a date that Gary Gensler is resigning on January 20th. Of course, the same time that Trump's coming into office. So he does not want to give Trump the ability to fire him, apparently. But what's kind of exciting about that, too, is there is another SEC commissioner. So out of the five total, Gary Gensler is one. There were two other pro crypto guys and two non-pro. And the other not pro crypto commissioner, or one of the other two, is also resigning at the same time. And I think it's for family or personal issues is what he's saying. So that's exciting. And if you look at the SEC, I think it was like 18% of all their tips, complaints, and referrals were crypto related, despite the crypto markets really compromising less than about 1% of the US capital markets. So there's been a ton of focus from the SEC on crypto when it is not nearly as large as everything else, which is kind of crazy too.
Yeah, I tweeted that they had the largest number of fines levied against organizations this year, and they're kind of bragging about fining. And I'm like, well, you're only fining a lot of people because your regulations are not clear and no one knows what to do. So they just do things and then you fine them, and then you're settling for lesser fines because the courts are kind of agreeing with the company side. So it's time to move on. SEC, like, January 20th can't get here fast enough to go ahead and see what we got, like, in this new regime. Let's see what we got with the new SEC. Let's see what we got with the new Treasury Secretary. Let's see, like, you got Christmas, and then Christmas, you get to unwrap another Christmas present in January to see what it means for Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, we'll talk about the appointments in just a second, because I think those are kind of important to address. But the SEC did get another loss right after, I think, Gary Gensler announced his resignation. There was a Texas court that tossed the SEC's dealer rule, which really expanded the definition of a securities dealer to a wider swath of firms, which includes some in the crypto sector. So it is kind of just what you said, right? Where the SEC does something, it goes to the courts, and the courts disagree with what the SEC says. So it's exciting to see the SEC getting more, or racking up more losses, because they're getting a lot of those lately. But yeah, it's moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think it be clear that whoever comes into the SEC or whoever's the chairperson next, cleaning up the crypto stuff is going to be, even though it's not a huge portion of their purview, it is a pressing issue. So I think when they get assigned that role, that'll be a key thing that they need to take care of quickly. And then once those rails are set, you know, crypto will be able to continue. And Trump has said some pretty outlandishly positive things about crypto companies that are in the U.S. about, as far as tax breaks and things like that for businesses that are started in the U.S. So I don't know if any of that's going to come true or not, but at least they're talking about some favorable stuff.
That would be nice. We'll see what happens. I think there was a DAO in California that the courts ruled that DAOs are a general partnership, which makes, I think, each individual inside of that liable instead of a kind of a LLC type of thing. So granted, that's just California, but it is definitely creating some problems with one of the DAOs that apparently some guy lost money on, and now he's suing the entire DAO and saying it's their fault and he needs to be repaid. So that will be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, DAOs are definitely something they need to come up with new legislation for, because they're different than anything else that's ever happened.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to be able to shoehorn 1940s legislation and figure out a way to cram DAOs in so that it makes sense. You just need to come out with your own, like, new legislation that makes sense for a DAO to exist, for the liabilities to be, like, accounted for properly, and for people to be able to use them without, you know, being afraid that their liabilities are so they need to really take a look at that and actually come up with something. So, you know, that's for the SEC to do.
Yeah, it's almost like the way that the California court looked at it was that if you even post in a forum, you could be held liable for the actions of the members in that organization. It's crazy. Right. So, oh, well. So let's talk a little bit about some of the appointments, because they've announced a handful of those. Kind of one of the big ones being Scott Bessent, who is the Treasury Secretary. And it's kind of interesting because, one, he's very pro-crypto, but he's also in favor of a weaker dollar and lower oil prices. So I was reading a little bit about him, and I guess I'm a huge Rob Paul fan. He said he's known him for about a decade, and he said he gets it. So he said it's very good for your bags in crypto. So it's exciting to see that there is more crypto pro crypto people being put in there. And of course, Howard Lutnick got the Commerce Secretary, and RFK is the Health and Human Services Secretary, which both of those guys are very big Bitcoin guys too.
Yeah, I've read a little bit about Scott Bessent as well, and I agree it's good for Bitcoin and crypto. Weaker dollar, I would assume lower interest rates, and they've got to lower the price of oil because otherwise everything's just inflationary. So they got to balance inflation by dropping oil prices and energy costs. So we'll see how it goes. The inflation piece is the trickiest one when you're trying to figure out what to do and then how to manage the economy, unemployment, and inflation. It seems to be the one that can kind of get away from you the fastest. So we'll see what happens. I think their first moves will be pro Bitcoin and pro crypto, and then they may have to adjust that depending on how things go. But it's nice to know that they're not against us. It's been a long time since we've had politicians that aren't like fighting against Bitcoin and crypto.
Yeah, exactly. So last time we talked, it was the first day of Bitcoin's options on ETFs going live. And there's been some of the numbers that have come in, and it's pretty interesting. BlackRock was, of course, the only one on the first day. They saw $1.9 billion in volume on day one, which is less than gold's $5 billion. But considering that was day one, it's pretty freaking impressive. So it's definitely helped out the ETFs, and now I think everybody else has their options live now too. So it's intriguing to see. We've passed a new all-time high in total assets in Bitcoin ETFs. We're over $100 billion, which is really just about $18 billion away from surpassing all the assets in gold ETFs. And BlackRock is close to half of that. I think they're about $48 billion, and Grayscale is at, what, $21 billion, which, considering the lead they had that at the beginning, is...
It's definitely crazy because now the price of Bitcoin is almost $100,000 per Bitcoin. So they have lost a fortune in the Grayscale retreat that has been going on since January. That's got to go down as one of the dumbest decisions that a financial institution made involving Bitcoin. Like, it's just, once you sell that Bitcoin and once it disappears, you can't get it back. Like, the price just runs away from you. And so, yeah, I mean, BlackRock, surprise, BlackRock is winning. It seems like when they get involved, they win. But, you know, you talk about winning, like, people are getting exposure to Bitcoin from that wouldn't have it otherwise. You know, these ETFs are really good for people to get a exposure to Bitcoin, even though, you know, in the grand scheme of the Bitcoin mantra, not your keys, not your coins, doesn't qualify. There's a lot of people that would have zero. They're never going to get their own keys. They're never going to go to Coinbase. They're never going to buy a hardware wallet. They're never going to do any of that stuff. But now they get to kind of play in the Bitcoin number go up side of the technology, maybe not the freedom money side of the technology. But at the same time, it was always going to happen. So whether it happens in 2024 or 20, what does it matter? Like, you don't get to control when it happens. So I think it's overall a good thing. It's a, you know, I'm seeing a lot of companies putting these ETFs on their balance sheet, which those are companies that would not be putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet in any way if it wasn't for the ETFs. So these are the kind of things that you sort of pull for, as long as, I mean, I do feel like MicroStrategy, the ETFs, you know, it's starting to build a case for the thing that goes wrong, this cycle that brings everything down. I'm not sure how it happens, but, you know, Coinbase is the custodian for all of these things for the most part. So, you know, it seems like every time there's a house of cards that's built that sounds good, and then something goes wrong, and you don't expect it to go wrong, and it does. So there's definitely a lot of concentration in the ETFs and in Coinbase and in MicroStrategy, and that seems to be where things go the worst. So, you know, it's a cycle. So this cycle, I'm kind of looking out for what's going to go wrong. I feel like it's easy to see the things that are going to go right. what's gonna go wrong is maybe a little tougher to predict.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You have investment guys like Charles Schwab, where I think the CEO just came out and said he feels silly for not buying into crypto earlier. Their goal is to offer crypto directly to customers, and they said they've just been waiting on a change in regulatory environment, which is here or about to be here officially. So, I mean, yes, things definitely could go wrong, but there's still a lot of people that are realizing now is a good time to get in. So there's a ton of excitement from my perspective too.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, like, my Schwab account was how I was able to get into the ETFs with my retirement funds. Like, you know, he feels silly for not being into it enough and not offering it enough to his clients. But then you got Vanguard, who's still not going to do it, not allowing anything. So, you know, to me is a big name in the investment world, but you know, Edward Jones still doesn't allow the ETFs to their clients in any way. And they blocked like all the miners and the like MicroStrategy plays are all not allowed as well. So, you know, there's a lot of these big players that just aren't budging and not allowing anything. So the ones that do, I think, are going to have an advantage. And we talked about, you know, 9 to 12 months for some of these institutions to get on board from the start of the ETFs. And it's, I mean, we're at 10 months now, 11 months now. So, you know, we're kind of getting close to no more excuses for these big guys. And, you know, if the timing works out, you have January, you got new people in place that are more crypto friendly. So the regulatory risk goes away. And, oh, by the way, the institutions have done their due diligence and they can approve the ETFs. And, you know, if that money flows in at the same time that there's a strategic Bitcoin stockpile created, and you know, you could really see a case where you do see the price shoot up. You know, sure, we've had trouble breaking the $100,000 barrier, like we bounced off of that, but the institutions don't care about it. The strategic Bitcoin stockpile, you know, sovereign wealth guys, they don't care about 100,000 Bitcoin. It's really just American retail that cares about it. So we should be able to bust through that with some of these big bull cases. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I don't know if you saw the comment from Matt at Bitwise where he pretty much said, you're still early until Bitcoin hits $500,000. It's like, huh, okay.
I mean, you're still front running a lot of institutions. You're still front running the United States. You're front running most of the countries. You know, you're front running a lot of the high wealth individuals. Yeah, I mean, it's still kind of a small sub $2 trillion asset class. Now, it kind of ties with silver at these prices. So it's not early. Yeah. Like, silver is kind of a big asset class, but, you know, we're still a fraction of the gold market cap. So, you know, I think, yeah, if we get to half the market cap of gold, that's about 500,000. That's where it starts to be not early anymore. You get, you know, if you get to half the market cap of gold, you're going to get to the full market cap of gold. Like, it's tough to say if you're at 5% of the market cap of gold, you're going to get there, even 10%. But if you're halfway there, you just need one more double. But Bitcoin doesn't have a problem doubling, and there's still probably a lot of unlocks left. A lot of big players probably still aren't in the game when you get to $500,000 Bitcoin. So I wouldn't disagree. But it does feel like the early stuff is starting to fade and we're getting into more like mass adoption type stuff.
Yeah. Well, speaking of mass adoption, we're starting to see some more ETFs pop out as well. Not that this is a new thing, but Solana just had their fourth company apply for a Solana ETF. Hit a new all-time high finally, I guess, this past week. It's been 1,111 days since their last all-time high. And what's kind of interesting is if you look at the last all-time high, their price was about 5.7% of Ethereum. It's now 7.7% of Ethereum. So it is kind of catching or eating some of Ethereum's market share. And the Bitwise CEO also called Solana an incredible emerging asset and story. So I know it's definitely getting more attention. We'll see kind of what happens from there, but it continues to be one of those companies that is most likely to be kind of probably the next ETF play outside of Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Yeah, that Solana all-time high hit my radar. Cardano price jump hit my radar. ETH lagging hit my radar. Like they seem to just not be able to. They hit a little bit of a bump to get out of that $3,000 range and up to like the $3,300, $3,400 range. And but, I, you know, nobody really seems to be talking about them very favorably. And maybe it's just kind of like they're old news. But it seemed to me that some old school Bitcoin holders sold at 100,000 and rotated it into altcoins, and altcoins kind of caught a bid there. I don't think that's going to be the case for this whole cycle, because you just have a lot of new money coming in that's going to hold. And so I'm curious to see what happens if these old school crypto guys sell the Bitcoin and roll it into alts, or if they just hold the Bitcoin this time. That's kind of it's something to watch.
Most of the data that I saw was the sell-off was coming from Bitcoin that was acquired around 56K, which is kind of the youngest long-term holders. So it wasn't the ones that have been holding for a very long time. So I don't know. We'll kind of see what happens. But I think most people that are real Bitcoin people are probably not selling at 100K and realizing that it's still got a ways to go. But I could be wrong.
If you play the cycle game, this is not the time in the cycle to sell. You know, we're a year early. I mean, it's October of next year before you kind of hit what's usually the peak. So to sell right now as you're kind of hitting 100,000 seems a little short-sighted to me. But there's just too much good news in front of us. I have been wrong before, and I don't sell Bitcoin. So it's not like I'm super focused on it, but it definitely seems like a premature exit ramp to get out of Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the other coins that's kind of jumped here lately has been XRP. WisdomTree is also the fourth company to apply for an XRP ETF, fourth with an asterisk, because there's, I think, two other combo crypto ETFs that include XRP. So another one that could be kind of next in line to possibly get approval. And them and Stellar have done very well in the past week or two as well. They've jumped quite a bit.
Yeah, that's. I've heard a little bit about them. I haven't been paying much attention. You know, they're kind of just off my radar, and I'm not into them. You know, 5 years ago or whenever, I was kind of like playing with them, but I kind of don't do that stuff anymore.
Yep. Well, let's talk about MicroStrategy. I feel like we're going to have to talk about them every week because they're doing something crazy. They just raised another $3 billion, 0% coupon and 55% premium, which is great. But then on top of that, they bought another 55,500 Bitcoin for $5.4 billion in the last 6 days. So they now hold 300.7K of Bitcoin, which is worth about $37 billion. I think it's like 1.7% of all the Bitcoin. They're probably on pace to get to about 4% for the next decade, I think is what everybody thinks. So just crazy. It's amazing to see what they're doing.
Yeah, so I like to watch what their average like cost basis is. One of the reasons is because I was kind of had a similar cost basis, and it's nice when MicroStrategy buys because it's like a little reassuring for people that are buying. Like, oh, if this guy's buying, it's not a terrible spot to buy in. Their cost basis is up to 56,000, almost 57,000. And so, you know, that's quite a bit higher than the 200-week moving average that's, in the 30s. So, but the way he's buying with these convertible notes at 0%, his cost basis almost doesn't matter. He doesn't get liquidated. There is no margin calls. Like, it's not like it was, in 2021 when he was getting loans that were leveraged. And now it's like the prices, if it dips, it doesn't really matter to him. And his convertible notes are a 5 year on 5 year terms. So like straight up MicroStrategy is just in a crazy spot. Like, I'm not going to tell anybody what to do with their money, but I mean, if you're looking at MicroStrategy, you've got the QQQ inclusion. That decision comes up on Friday of this week on the 29th. So if they do get included into the NASDAQ top 100, that's a lot of passive flows that come their way from people investing in the queues. Then the FASB accounting rules will help them out because it'll simplify it'll just look like they made a ton of profit because their Bitcoin gains will be on their on their reporting. So you've got that, which would be bullish. And then you've got the S&P 500 inclusion after that, because they qualify in several ways, but they're missing a profit of like number of quarters in profit to get included. But the FASB accounting rules will help with that as long as the Bitcoin price is going up. So you could see them get into the Qs, into the S&P 500. They could get the FASB accounting rules to make their profitability look better. And they've got like $30 billion left to deploy of the $42 billion that he said they want to move. So it's pretty easy to see the MicroStrategy bull case. You know, they're kind of bouncing around between $400 and $500 a share, and they've got a lot of room to run. It's pretty weird.
Yeah, I think someone had set a price target not too long ago of, I don't know what it was, 290 or something like that. MicroStrategy hit it in 11 days.
Yeah.
It's becoming, someone set the price target for them, and they're just like, oh yeah, we're going to do that here shortly.
Yeah, well, you know, the more you're into Bitcoin and the more you realize that most of these Wall Street guys just know, like, they're just one trick ponies. They know how to put stock data into a spreadsheet or into a software that somebody else wrote, and it spits out if it's good or not, or spits out a target price. Like, their ability to think critically and look at this thing is like, nobody's doing this, right? Like, if I hear somebody talk about the operating, like, well, the operating company only spends off $50 million in profit a year. I'm like, that's the least important piece to this entire thing. And then because the next thing out of their mouth is, well, the value of the Bitcoin is only $37 billion, so the market cap of $90 billion is way out of whack. There's no reason that they're getting a premium over NAV, except for the fact that they can pull in bond funds and insurance companies and pension funds, and no one else can. Like, they basically have a monopoly on Bitcoin, and they have a monopoly on going out and getting these convertible notes that pay 90% returns.
Yeah.
with limited downside, because they hedge the bet by shorting the stock. So, you know, if you allocate $100 million to the convertible note, then you immediately go sell some calls because you've got shares allocated to you that you can leverage. So maybe it costs you $30 million for the position. And if the Bitcoin price runs and MicroStrategy stock goes up and you convert, you know, this last round converted at a 55% premium. So you're getting the stock price at 55% above where it is on the day that you contribute your funds to the convertible note. I mean, it's a pretty wild thing that they have figured out, and they're completely transparent. Anybody else that wants to do it can do it too.
Yeah,
like, they're not going to run out of money from the bond fund or from the pool of money that can attribute money to the convertible notes. There's like, so I, that was one thing that I was curious about. So I was like listening to some people talk about these bonds and the market behind it. So it's like, maybe there's a several hundred billion dollars that can allocate funds to convertible notes just based on how their charters are written. But there's $300 trillion in the bond market. Some of that money they could probably allocate to the convertible notes if they, you know, see that as an opportunity. They could change some things and get some money shifted around. So, I mean, you know, $21 billion in convertible notes sounds like a lot, but they've got hundreds of billions of dollars immediately available, and then some fraction of $300 trillion that may be available in the longer term. So it seems like this thing's going to run for a while. I think maybe if regulators step in and say, you just can't do this, and you're cheating. That's the only thing I see slowing this thing down anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So Michael Saylor did a keynote to Cantor Fitzgerald, which is where Howard Lutton, I guess, owns for now until he steps down and becomes the Secretary of Commerce. What he talked about, and I think we've talked a little bit about this in the past, was 21 years from now, the total wealth will have changed in the world. And today it's at $900 trillion. In 21 years, the total wealth is going to be about $4,000 trillion. So a pretty big increase. But Bitcoin is going to increase quite a lot more. So it goes, right now it's, I think, $1.8 trillion. Prediction is $280 trillion of that $4,000 trillion, which puts each Bitcoin at 13.33 million. But it's, I mean, if you look at all the other assets out there, they're not really going down. It's not like all real estate's going to dry up or anything. They all grow. They're all growing because of inflation of some sort. And Bitcoin is just going to be growing much faster than all the other ones. And it makes sense for sure. So I'm excited to see what happens. And if it really takes 21 years for it to get to 13 million, or if it takes 21 weeks.
No, I'm with you. I mean, the global wealth is definitely going to grow as everything's demonetized, and it's not, you know, the pie gets bigger. Bitcoin increase in market cap isn't at a cost of, or isn't necessarily at the cost of gold and real estate and everything else. They don't have to go down for Bitcoin to go up significantly. You know, it's kind of the beauty of having the small market cap. You need less money flowing in order to change the price of Bitcoin. And nobody's given up on real estate. You know, I think some Bitcoiners talk about Bitcoin eating real estate and eating gold. I just don't think you're going to see that those asset classes take a big hit and money flow into Bitcoin, you know, in a major way. I think you just start seeing more money allocated to Bitcoin and less new money allocated to those asset classes. So Bitcoin goes up faster. And it's like everything. If you have dollars or whatever currency you have, you got to pick something to buy that's not going to fall apart on you. And whether it's gold or real estate or Bitcoin or something, you have to pick your racehorse. And more people are picking Bitcoin because it's, you know, you got 15, 16 years of history now instead of 10. You got a regulatory environment that's more friendly. It's easier to get a hold of through the ETFs. So it's, you know, it's not hard to figure out that Bitcoin's going up. Like if you look, you know, the more and more people are starting to understand the difference between volatility and risk. And if you can handle some short-term volatility, then you don't have, it's not long-term risk. So, you know, to me, if you're going to hold, if you've got cash that you're going to sit on for 4 years or longer, Bitcoin is the horse, man.
Yeah. I mean, on top of that, Bitcoin is a commodity that has a fixed supply, right? And I think more people are starting to understand what that means, because you have things like gold, where China just found $83 billion worth of gold underneath some province over there, which that's another 1,000 tons of gold. And granted, there's only probably 244,000 tons existing. So it's what percent, less than 1% of an addition. Yeah. It's still, that's an addition, right? So if they find a meteor that's all gold and all of a sudden they're space mining gold, then that brings gold down. You can't do that with Bitcoin.
Right. Yeah. You, if the gold price runs, then they can go mine more gold that's more difficult to mine, that's more expensive to mine, because now the value proposition to mine that gold exists. So you can add more gold, you know, in the stock to flow sense. You can add more flow to the stock and effectively dilute the holders of gold. Also, it's gold. I mean, it's like, it's not an awesome thing to transact in. I looked at buying some gold coins, and it's like, well, you pay this premium when you buy it, and then when you sell it, you know, you have to pay. There's basically a premium that you lose on that side too. So you lose like 5% buying and 5% selling. So you need a 10% move to break even on gold. I'm like, well, that sucks. Like, I'll just go back. I literally just like, I'm just going to go buy Bitcoin. Like, I don't, screw diversity. I've got some real, like, I just don't need gold. I've got real estate and Bitcoin. That's good enough.
So some other things that I think are worth noting, and I can't wait for the day when we don't have to ever talk about FTX again. They have announced that they're going to finally begin distributions in March of 2025 now. There's about $16.5 billion of cash that they are planning to distribute. Of course, the big thing was they're giving everybody 119% of the cash value from when FTX failed back in November. What's crazy is Bitcoin is close to 5x the price since then. So that 119% of cash value is more like you're getting 20-ish%. And it's even worse if you had Solana at FTX, because Solana was $17 then. And it just went up to what, 260, right? So, I mean, it is not a pretty picture. I think they voted on whether or not to go buy crypto and pay people in kind, but they said that would jack up the crypto prices, going and buying $16.5 billion worth of crypto. But at the same time, man, all these people are missing out on what's been happening this last couple of years. So it sucks for them for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're buying Bitcoin or crypto and you leave it on exchange, I do feel bad for you, but you definitely heard, don't leave it on the exchange. Like, that was definitely, like, if you did 1 second of research, that you heard, don't leave your crypto on exchanges and don't leave your Bitcoin on exchanges. But man, that's a tough pill to swallow, being in Solana at $17 and having to only collect $17 instead of $250. That's tough, because Solana is kind of the, whatever, it's probably a top five crypto back then, you know, I mean, it was just small. So you're talking about, like, it's not like you took a long shot on some meme coin that had no chance. I mean, you could have had a pretty good investment thesis on Solana being the next Ethereum as soon as they figure out how to keep the system running or whatever. You could have done everything right. Put your money on Solana and believed in the technology, and then kept it on FTX and totally got your head knocked off. That's getting your head knocked off. $17 on 250. That's absolutely terrible.
Yeah. One of the other things that I did hear that is funny and scary at the same time, there's, I guess, what's called the inverse Cramer effect with Jim Cramer from Mad Money. Yeah. He just became super bullish on Bitcoin, which is never a good thing. He's been very good at calling tops, and it's been one of those things where I think someone said, if you track any time he said buy something and shorted it, you would be up a ton of money. And I think I saw some stuff on X where people were like, oh, I'm maxing out 49 lines of credit and betting everything against Bitcoin moving forward. So hopefully he might actually be right for the first time and it might be better. What was interesting, he did say that, he talked about MicroStrategy, and he's like, yeah, MicroStrategy is okay, but owning Bitcoin is the better thing, which is funny because owning MicroStrategy has been better than Bitcoin for a long while. But yeah, hopefully maybe that switches and owning Bitcoin is better than MicroStrategy at some point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Cramer thing is, it's just so funny because I think he said it when it was in the high 90s and now it's in the low 90s, like 4 days later, 5 days later, you know, it's like, it's so automatic. But it's just like the institutions and everything. He just moves slow. Like, he just won't. When you and I flip a switch, like, hey, looks like things are heating up, he's like, no, not yet. Like, he needs to see, like, confirmation after confirmation after confirmation after confirmation. And you and I are like, well, you know, I mean, it's kind of towards the end of summer, you know, coming into fall, that's when things kind of heat up. So we're looking for areas. So, I mean, you know, when Bitcoin last went into the 50s, I was like buying my last bit of dry powder. And then it went 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it's like all the way up. And I don't, you know, guys like us, we don't wait, you know, for it to hit 90 before we're like, oh, it's going up. Like, you know, once it broke 75, I'm like, all right, we're in the all-time highs. Let's see what happens. We don't have any technical support and resistance to go by. It's like, what are people willing to pay? And they were willing to pay whatever it took until they got to that $100,000 sell wall that had 2,000 Bitcoin in it that we couldn't chew through in the first bump. So, you know, we're going to bump our head on that sell wall for a while, and then eventually we'll break through it. And then we'll do that same thing where there's like, let's just see what people will pay. Like, there's no one knows what the max price is because we've never seen these prices before. And there's just not a lot of, like, 120,000 is a met. Like, I can't wait for it to hit 120,000 so I can sell. Like, you just don't get that. Maybe you'll see some of that at 150 and 200, But I mean, you know, this thing can run like pretty quick through the hundreds. But as soon as we get through that $100,000 sell wall.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it went up what 20K in less than a week.
It was
once
fast.
It passed that new all time high, right? So it's kind of one of those same things. Once it passes those big mental barriers, which is the 100K, the 150K, the 200K, it could jump very quickly after those. Yeah. So I know this isn't a project you're paying attention to, but it is one of the ones that seems to have some legs in terms of smart contract platforms. SUI, however you say it, had a major outage here in the past week. They were shut for a few hours because of a code issue, but it triggered about a 7% drop in the price, which, I mean, the rest of the market was going up and they're going down, but it kind of reminds me of the old Solana days where you had to ask when Solana was open. So there's a lot of companies out there that have some great technology, but they don't have the history of pretty much nonstop operation like the Bitcoins or the Cardanos or the Ethereums. So a lot of these guys still have some work to do.
Yeah, I don't track the altcoins that far down the list, but Ethereum and Solana, they're still on my like watch list for on my trade view. So I still kind of pay attention to those a little bit, and I look for like if Bitcoin's up 2% and one of them is up 5 or 8 or 10%, I'm like, oh, that's something. Or if Bitcoin's down and they're up or something like that, that's kind of the only thing I'm paying attention to. Mainly just I have some old coins that I just haven't sold, and they probably won't survive this cycle, you know.
So the other reason I bring up SUI is there's a company called Chirp that has just created the first SUI deep end play to earn game. And what it is pretty much you are walking around and detecting wireless networks, which is contributing to this geolocation database for real-world applications, which is huge for the IoT space. So it's kind of a cool thing they're doing that you can earn some Chirp tokens and have fun playing this game, and then it can turn into something that the rest of the world can use as IoT becomes bigger and bigger, and it is becoming bigger and bigger if you pay any attention to that space at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the Pokemon Go thing, like being a data capture tool for the programmers. You know, as long as the users know that that's what they're doing, then I'm okay with it. So I don't have a problem with it.
Yep. So Coinbase was also in the news here recently. They just became a partner for the LA Clippers. So see a lot of Coinbase branding moving forward for that NBA team. And they are delisting wrapped Bitcoin, WBTC. They're saying it no longer meets the listing requirements. Conveniently, that they also came up with their competitor to this, so CBBTC. But after Justin Sun and BitGlobal announced plans to custody Bitcoin for WBTC, there was a lot of question marks on what was going to happen. And of course, they're claiming foul play, that Coinbase is trying to kill wrapped Bitcoin. But we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I don't know about the wrapped Bitcoin and the CBBTC stuff. I haven't looked into it enough to understand if I think it's worth anything or not. You know, some of it can be viewed as layer two stuff to kind of move things around faster and cheaper. But it's also kind of like paper Bitcoin, which never seems to end favorably for the holders of the paper Bitcoin. And it kind of sucks for Bitcoin holders too, because as money flows in, some of it goes into wrapped Bitcoin and some of it goes into CBBTN instead of going and really moving the Bitcoin price and getting that retail, you know, interest peaked. So I don't know where I stand on the wrapped Bitcoin and CBBTC stuff.
So to me, I think the ultimate goal at the end of the day is increasing the velocity of money. And what wrapped Bitcoin and CBBTC does is increase the ability for everybody else to utilize Bitcoin in the DeFi space, which I think is a very growing space. So all it is for the most part, putting it on to the Ethereum network and allowing you to invest in Bitcoin. I think, and I'm not 100% sure, I thought there was some sort of proof of reserves for wrapped Bitcoin and CB, BTC. So it showed that, hey, we have this much CBBTC or this much wrapped Bitcoin, but we also have this actual Bitcoin in reserves to prove that we have a one for one. I'm not 100% sure, but I guess I'm assuming that's how that's supposed to work. But then you can also use that to go play in a DeFi space and get some returns that I think is going to be growing. There's still, I mean, it went through some hiccups in the past, but there are a lot of opportunities to utilize the DeFi space to replace kind of some of the TradFi experiences that people are having.
Yeah, I mean, if they bag it one-to-one, then that's kind of easy to for me to kind of get more on board with. And I just, it's like, you know, everybody's ethical when profits are high. It's when things get a little rough, where then it's like, oh, maybe we're 0.5 to 1 backed by Bitcoin. And so it kind of loosens up as, you know, things tighten up. But, you know, man, these are the things that people play with, and I don't have the stomach to play with it. Like, I don't want to lose any of my Bitcoin, so I'm not going to play.
Yeah, I mean, for those of us that have other things other than Bitcoin, it is nice for something like Rep Bitcoin, where you can go from whatever that coin is to Rep Bitcoin pretty easily on the ERC20 network, and then easily change that Rep Bitcoin to regular Bitcoin, rather than trying to find a trading pair on some exchange to go from whatever random coin that you're in to Bitcoin.
Yeah, I definitely remember the days of like trying to figure out the trading pairs that work in different exchanges, and like 7, 8, 6, 7 years ago. It's not like I've totally forgotten how tough that it can be.
Hence why you're only on Bitcoin now, because it was a pain in the ass then.
It's so much easier to buy Bitcoin and just not do anything else.
Well, and now, shoot, the last 4 years of the SEC, as a U.S. citizen, you're not really allowed to access most of the exchanges that have all those pairs. So you're kind of screwed from that perspective.
Yeah, I definitely have some funds on like Gate.io, I think.
Yep.
That's just toast. Like, I tried to get some customer support to try to get stuff off of there, and I think I just lost it. It's like, yeah, that's that. It's just a donation to the cause, I guess.
My hope is that some of this stuff will change and they'll start to open the doors back up to these other exchanges. Because I swear there was something that I had on the old Binance exchange that just locked out. Can't get on it. So, oh well.
Like those moves always happen in bear markets when I'm like not paying attention, when I'm like, ah, screw it, I'm just gonna go back to business, you know, go back to the day job, do all that. And then like the bull market comes around and you're like, oh man, what do I have over here? And it's like, you're not allowed to look at this website anymore. Like, crap, I didn't even, and you go look at your emails and you're like, oh, I missed these emails because I wasn't paying attention to this stuff at all.
So
it's just toast.
So speaking of Justin Sun, he was also in the news here recently. He just bought $30 million worth of World Liberty, which is the Trump DeFi project. They had previously only sold $21 million, so he more than doubled the amount that they have sold. I think he tweeted out something about he was excited to see U.S. become the next hub of blockchain, and that he's excited to be involved in this project. So now, apparently, Trump will get paid out on this. It wouldn't pay out until I think he sold $30 million. So he sold $30 million. I don't know if this gives Justin Sun, the founder of Tron, some more insights or connection to Trump and in the crypto space, but it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, I don't really care for this. The President of the United States probably doesn't need to be involved in a crypto coin that Justin's son is bailing out. Like, I don't care for this at all. This is like the dirty underbelly of having a pro crypto, pro Bitcoin regime coming in. But whatever, man. Like, I'd trade one group of crooks out for a different group of crooks, and the new group of crooks is more favorable to the stuff that I'm into. So like, all right, maybe we can avoid thermonuclear war in exchange for some crappy altcoins.
Yeah, so related to the nuclear war, I think a lot of things I hear from people is at what point are supercomputers just going to crack your Bitcoin passwords? And the newest supercomputer called El Capitan is about 5.4 million times faster than a typical home computer. But with the security in crypto, it would still take that supercomputer 10 billion years to brute force the private keys in Bitcoin and Ethereum. So we're still a little ways away before we have to worry about supercomputers breaking all the keys. I know quantum computing will change that at some point, but it's not here yet. And I still believe that we're going to find a fix before then. And we need to worry more about quantum computing breaking the keys to all the nuclear weapons before we need to worry about them breaking the keys to Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, or breaking the keys to your Wells Fargo and Bank of America accounts, because there's way more money that's way easier to crack in all of that and bring down the entire traditional financial market. That would happen way before the Bitcoin market gets attacked, because it's a bigger honeypot with less security. So, like, yeah, I'm not worried about the technological advancements, and like Bitcoin's positioned best to defend itself. You got decentralization, you got core developers, they'll figure it out. Like, if they don't, then everything's screwed. Like, Bitcoin would be like the last man standing. Like, all of your stocks would be toast before your Bitcoin is toast, and then all your checking accounts and savings accounts are toast before that. So now I don't worry about the end of the world things. Like, if that happens, then everything's screwed. So, like, why worry about it?
Yeah. And then the last thing I had was just more of kind of a fun story. I was talking to a buddy, and he had some teenage kids. He was thinking about getting some insurance for them just due to some health issues that he had had, and thought it would be good for them to have some insurance policies early on so that they don't get denied for life insurance later on. And we started talking about it. I was like, why don't you just buy them a Bitcoin each? I was like, I mean, I know it's expensive, but he definitely, the money wasn't the issue. He just wanted to provide some protection for the kids later on. And I was like, I mean, shoot, it's $100,000 now. It's going to be in the multi-millions in 10, 20 years. You're not going to have any other sort of insurance policy that's going to guarantee to have any sort of cash value at that point without putting in a lot more money than that. So he's like, huh, I haven't thought of it that way. And I was like, it's a genius idea. I don't know why more people don't think about that, but that's also probably not most people's priorities either.
No, I mean, so I've got my 12-year-old, you know, he's got a car fund, and we put money into the car fund, but we exclusively, he wants it in Bitcoin, because from 12 to 16 is 4 years, and 4 years is usually good for Bitcoin. So everything that we go into the car fund for getting good grades or anything else gets put in Bitcoin. And, you know, I mean, between the car fund and his Bitcoin on the side, he's got a pretty good little stash going for a 12-year-old. And so it's pretty nice. And then I got a 7-year-old behind that that's got some Bitcoin for a car fund. And like, I just think it'll be a nice thing to teach them, like, hey, like, you can get out of dollars, get into something else, watch it escalate, and have some conviction in the trade. And you don't have to worry about the volatility in the short term if you only have a long-term goal. So, you know, insurance for your kids as they get older is a long-term goal. Like, having my Roth and my 401k hold Bitcoin ETFs is a good use of Bitcoin, in my opinion, because I'm, you know, 15 to 20 years away from being able to touch that money anyway. So why not hold some Bitcoin in there? And, you know, it's like the same thing with these corporate reserves and sovereign wealth funds. It's like, you know, they're not looking to sell that stuff. If you're looking to buy something and not sell it, and you have some long-term goal, you know, Bitcoin, especially right now, is kind of a no-brainer. I mean, yes, we're at $100,000 and we've never been this high. You know, we're going up. I mean, it's the writing's on the wall. So if you get in now, you're going up, and then maybe we don't come back down this far again. So it's a good place to buy. But if you don't have any, then it's definitely a good place to buy, because Bitcoin will run away from you, and you will have nothing to do but buy it at a higher price.
Yep, exactly. Hopefully your son is not the same as my six-year-old who thinks he wants to get a Lamborghini with his car fund. So,
no, I don't think he'll go with a Lambo. I don't think Dad will let him buy a Lambo, no matter what happens to his Bitcoin stack. That's you know, there's a safety concern there.
Well, luckily he did point out the Lamborghini that he saw, and it was a Kia. Well, that is not exactly a Lamborghini, but we'll work on this. That one you might be able to afford.
That's pretty awesome.
Awesome. Well, anything else that I missed?
I had a couple of notes. We talked about MicroStrategy and their convertible note. Marathon actually executed their first convertible note at a $1 billion and 0%. So that MicroStrategy finally has somebody that's kind of following fully in their footsteps. There's a handful of other small businesses that added Bitcoin to the balance sheet. Thumbs Up, Genius Group, Cosmos Health, LQR House, a pharmaceutical company, and Rumble, the social media group, was talking about it. I think that they ended up doing it, or at least approving it. So that's a handful in a week. And you know how these things go. El Salvador falls one year, and then 4 years later, Bhutan and some Middle Eastern Qatar, you know, like, so if you got five in a week, or in some of those we probably mentioned over the last month. So, but you know, in the next month, we'll have another 10, 12, 20, who knows? And then after that, it'll be 100. And so the, you know, the more companies that are coming in, and some of these are only buying like $1 million worth of Bitcoin. That's okay. You know, like if you only have $40-50 million in reserves and you're buying $1 million in Bitcoin, you're way ahead of the people that are sitting on $40-50 million in reserves that aren't doing anything in Bitcoin. So I don't have any problem with people dipping their toes in it. It's kind of a funky thing, and I get that. And it's definitely funky for a company when you've only got a handful of companies doing it. So, but I'm good for these guys, man. If Bitcoin works the way it's always worked, if you get in early, you're better off.
Yeah, I think what I read about Marathon is they were kind of oversubscribed. So they increased their offering by like 15 or 20% of what they were planning. And kind of goes back to your point of there's not a lot of companies doing this. So the demand is out there and everybody wants to be a part of this one way or the other. And so, I mean, it's exciting to see. I think once we start seeing these companies struggle to get the funding for this, then we'll know that we've kind of reached the peak, but that's not been the case at all lately.
Yeah, that's the way I see it too. You know, I am kind of paying attention to like when MicroStrategy wants to get a $2 billion convertible note and they only get 1.8, that would be a signal to me.
Yeah.
Another signal was Chinese court said that owning Bitcoin is legal again. So flip-flop. China's back to having a little bit of a pro-Bitcoin stance. But I think these are the things that happen when the United States has a more pro-Bitcoin stance. Everybody's got to kind of adjust. You know, the game theory works at the nation-state level. It works at the corporate level. It works at the institutions. You know, Schwab feels silly for not being in. Vanguard's going to feel real dumb if they don't already. Like, game theory is, there's an MIT course on game theory that's free, available on the internet, and it's probably worth listening to while you're driving, because understanding game theory is a nice way to kind of keep yourself ahead of the game in Bitcoin. Because at this early, once you do enough research into Bitcoin and you're like, okay, this thing's not going to zero, if it doesn't go to zero, it's got to go up. If it goes up, other people are going to get into it eventually. And then you start to like understand that up is 99% chance of the direction that this thing goes. Figuring out the game theory of like which one domino is going to fall, it's going to knock over another domino. Eventually that the next domino knocks over three dominoes, and then those three knock over six apiece. And then it's, you know, you're on an S adoption curve and things will just run. And so these little pieces where one organization in a cohort decides to get into Bitcoin, as soon as one of them does it, guys like me and you know, another one's going to do it eventually. And then once two of them do it, four of them will do it. And next thing you know, it's going to be 10% of the cohort is got some kind of exposure to Bitcoin. And they'll do it in different ways because they're, you know, competing, but it doesn't matter which way they do it, because it all goes down to the bedrock of Bitcoin. Like, they have to buy Bitcoin in one way or another. If they do the ETFs have to buy it. And if they hold it themselves, they have to buy it. And there's no substitution and there's no paper Bitcoin, you know, in theory at least. So, yeah, the demand goes up, the price goes up because supply is pretty static. You know, I mean, you know, they keep talking about supply shock. We talked about a supply shock. You know, Bitcoin's coming off of the exchanges and there's not that much available. I think there's tons available. I think that we're not going to hit a supply shock in a real sense for a long time. But, you know, the mining, the Bitcoin that's being mined, it seems very insignificant to the demand that we see from institutions and corporations and countries. It's like every day we hear, oh, so-and-so bought a month's worth of the of Bitcoin to be mined. Then, like, mine Bitcoin as a fraction of the total Bitcoin available is almost insignificant. So I think we'll see price go up, and then maybe eventually we'll see a supply shock where it is actually hard to find Bitcoin for sale. But right now, I mean, it seems like it's fairly easy to find. People seem fairly willing to sell some Bitcoin at 100,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy if you think about it. What the total mined per day is $45 million worth of Bitcoin-ish. I mean, less than that, right? But I mean, what, the ETFs had $1 billion of inflows in one day last week. So it doesn't make sense that, yes, there is still some supply out there. We're at probably some of the lowest levels of Bitcoin on exchanges that we've been for a long, long time. So at some point, something has to happen. And shoot, you can argue it has been happening. It's been going up quite a bit in the past couple of months, right? So when does it stop? Maybe when the inflows stop, but the inflows are just starting to increase.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you said it, all right, ETFs, $1 billion a day, some days. It seems like almost every day is a net inflow to the ETFs. And that net inflow seems to range between tens of millions to single digit billions per day of inflows. That's a lot, right? But when you're talking about $45 million per day being mined at 100,000, so 450 Bitcoin. But then you got MicroStrategy on the side of that buying 27,000, 51,000, 55,000 Bitcoin in chunks. And that's in the last 2 weeks. So, you know, you add up all of this, you know, they're all pulling from the same pool of Bitcoin. So, you know, if you've got all these different entities buying all this Bitcoin greater than what's available being mined, and the miners are holding what's being mined anyway, you know, Marathon isn't selling what they're mining. They're buying Bitcoin through convertible notes. So, you know, add Marathon. There's another $1 billion. So that's 25. That's almost a month's worth of mining. So, you know, eventually the mining just stops being important. And I think one time I heard Saylor mention this, like, why would I create a mining company and go after this small fraction of Bitcoin that's left to be mined in a highly competitive field when I can generate fiat in all these different ways and go after the 95% of Bitcoin that's already available? And so I'm like, man, that's a pretty smart way to look at it, which, surprise, Saylor looks at it in a pretty smart way. But I'm like, yeah, man, it is kind of easier to just raise money and buy Bitcoin than it is to buy ASICs, keep them running, find a power source that's cheap, and then compete against everybody else in these mining pools and slowly over time get your Bitcoin allocation and sell some of your Bitcoin in order to pay for the whole operation. Like, yeah, just get a loan. Like, especially at 0% over 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, in last week alone, he bought about 4 months or probably over 4 months worth of the mining supply. You don't want to be more than 50% of the miners. So for a typical miner to do something like that, it's going to be more than 8 months, and probably well more than 8 months.
Way more.
At least a year and a lot of investment on their end, that all that money just kind of that they made goes back to pay that investment off. So what Michael Saylor is doing is genius compared to what the miners are doing. Now the miners are still doing good, but he's doing it just in a much faster way of accumulation.
Yeah, it's almost like the miner's goal is to mine Bitcoin and Saylor's goal is to accumulate the most Bitcoin. Yeah. Like it's almost like which one do you actually want to do? If you're in the Bitcoin space, you want to hold as much Bitcoin as you can. So like, you know how it is when you run a business, sometimes you have your head down, you're working your butt off and you're kind of miss the goal. Like you miss the forest for the trees kind of thing. And I feel like some of these miners are in that boat, but excluding Marathon, it's almost like they picked their head up and they're like, oh, we're big enough. We're a public company. We can convert, we can issue convertible notes and we can do $1 billion worth. Like you said, $1 billion, you know, that's 25 days of mining and getting every single block for 25 days. Like Marathon can't do that. And now they've got I assume it's a 5-year convertible note at 0% and $1 billion. So they just took a massive leap forward and all they have to do is convert some shares at effectively a strike price somewhere down the road. Once their share price is through the roof. And oh, by the way, it's not like they have to issue those shares and dilute their existing shareholder base because the funders of the bond have shorted their stock. So it's really just, they just wipe out the short. It's a pretty clean way to do it. And yeah, it works really, really well when Bitcoin price keeps going up. So yeah, We'll see how this goes. I mean, from a Bitcoin standpoint, the more people buy it a billion at a time, the better. I mean, eventually that's going to show up in the price. I mean, I gotta think that it had a lot to do with going from 75 to 99. I'm hoping it'll be a big reason why we get through 100,000. And then once we're on the other side of that, man, if we have a couple other companies following the same path, you know, we could get through the hundreds pretty quick. So, you know me, man, I'm bullish on Bitcoin. I think it's going up. And I think we're going to see all of these things happen. And I always think I'm going to see them happen faster than they actually do. So the good news is I'm super patient because I don't want to sell my Bitcoin at any price at any time. So it's like, it would be great if it happened fast because it would make me like, you know, Thanksgiving this week, I could, you know, people would talk to me about Bitcoin favorably because they all know that I'm into it. So it's like, there's a little bit of bragging rights, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I'm not making any moves. I'm not like looking for a sell signal, not anytime soon. I mean, I've talked about it before. I'm not one of those guys that is like people for selling their Bitcoin. I mean, you're not going to live forever. And so, yeah, if you don't want to wait 21 years for Bitcoin to be 13 million and you want to sell some at 300 grand to go on some cool vacations and spend some time with kids that aren't going to be kids 21 years from now, like sell some Bitcoin and enjoy yourself, but yeah, Don't sell it all, you know, don't wreck a future just for the, you know, the current stuff. But man, if I'm already looking forward to how stupid my prediction is for January, for our January podcast. But my this year, man, this year is right in the window. Like 88 to 138 was my window. And like, we're at 99. Even if we just stick around here, like, I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not totally foolish about this. I mean, last year we probably started the year in the 30s, right? So I'm, you know, that predicting a triple is not, that's not an easy call. So I might get real dumb on this 2025 stuff though, because you start adding up all these different reasons to think the price is going up and you can really see how the price, you know, you can really see how Adam Beck comes up with a 7-figure price prediction.
Yeah. I would say when the cap is a 7-figure amount, then that makes things really interesting on where your range can be.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if we can do that, then we can do the podcast from some beach somewhere. I'll cash in some Bitcoin for if we get up there. I won't feel bad about that for a second.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, Hal, as always, it's been fun. I'm excited to see what's going to happen in the next week as crypto continues to have a lot of positive momentum going into this whole January 20th date, when hopefully we actually start to see something real happen at that point.
Yeah. I mean, it's great to hear the talk and it's great to see the people get, you know, assigned. And every time they assign someone to a position, I go to Grok and ask Grok what their Bitcoin position is. And Grok always tells me that they say something favorable in some public announcement. So it will be nice for this stuff to get locked in. It'll be nice if we could hurry up, feel like there's a bit of a race between January 20th and nuclear war. So if we could get to January 20th before nuclear bombs and missiles are launched, that'd be great. And we'll see what happens, man. If things really do go our way, you know, the bull case is pretty exciting.
Absolutely. Awesome. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds good, man. Thanks a lot.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.